Chief Justice Steele, Justice Jacobs, Ridgely, good afternoon. Your Honor, this case regarding Ms. Cooper resolves around one fact, whether a person who maintains a dwelling or a place of residence has standing to challenge the search of a residence where contraband is found, not in a common area, but in a separate bedroom.
I thought contraband was found in a common area.
That was in the pockets of the two individuals, the two defendants. When the officers came in the room, Justice Ridgely, the person they were looking for, Mr. Bradley, was there with another individual. They smelled marijuana. They searched Mr. Bradley and the co-defendant, and marijuana was found in their person, in their pockets. They then asked Mr. Bradley if there are any other drugs in the house. Mr. Bradley said, in the bedroom, in a shoebox, there's drugs. Ms. Cooper then came out of a bathroom, said, what's going on, and said, Mr. Bradley's selling drugs out of the house. That's my recollection of the facts.
What about the drug paraphernalia?
That also was found on the two. I think it may have been on the coffee table. I'm sorry about that. There, I think the two gentlemen in the common area in the living room. The scale I thought was found up in the bedroom in Mr. Bradley's room.
One of the fact issues was what possessory interest Cooper had in the house. Can you tell us what the record shows on that?
The record showed at the suppression hearing, which is the basis of this, the defense presented two witnesses, Mr. Norwood, who was the father of Mr. Bradley, and Ms. Bradley, who was actually the mother of Ms. Bradley, who happened to be at the premises at the time.
Who owned the house? Who had the right to occupy it, and what was Ms. Cooper's relationship to it?
Ms. Cooper, it was her residence. Mr. Norwood and Ms. Bradley both testified it was her residence. Mr. Bradley was, in fact, Ms. Cooper's ex-boyfriend.
Was there any contrary evidence?
The state did not present any contrary evidence to that. In fact, the state indicated that the probation officers had been there before. They knew where Mr. Bradley's bedroom was, but there was no contradictory evidence that it was not Ms. Cooper's residence. And both Ms. Norwood and Ms. Bradley and Mr. Norwood confirmed that when they were called to the witness stand in the suppression hearing.
Okay, and what possessory interest, if any, did Ms. Cooper have in the seized items?
None. The interest was they were found in her house or her residence. Yet, even though the state's arguing she had no possessory interest in the house, they are using the drugs that were found in a house where they claim she had no possessory interest. They're using a statement that she knew that this guy was selling drugs, which were the result of the individuals coming into the premises. Yet they then want to say, even though you're charging with you for these offenses, based partly on what you told the police and partly what we found in your bedroom or your boyfriend's bedroom, you're not allowed to challenge the search. That's what the state is saying.
Well, let's talk about the specific charge that relates to that. There's a charge of maintaining a drug property. How
Correct.
Does one maintain a drug property at the same time they have no possessory interest in the property?
They don't.
What's the law on this?
Well, if the state could show that my person, either through lease, living there, working there, and had knowledge, they could show possibly or probably that she was part of this drug, I'm going to call it a drug operation, because the house that she had a possessory interest in, she knowingly was using for the operation of distributing drugs. It's a stretch, but...
Well, at least in theory, could you aid and abet somebody in maintaining a dwelling for keeping controlled substances and not have a possessory interest? Let's assume you're the kingpin that's providing the money for the rent. And
yes, I believe you could. If you were, if the state could show that you're giving X the money to pay for the rent, yes. To answer your question is yes. You don't have to have, I don't believe, you have to have your name on the deed, the name on the lease, in order for the state to show that. Now, it then would be up to defense to say, okay, yeah, my name's on the lease, but I don't have a possessory interest. I don't know what they were doing there.
What was the basis for the trial judge's conclusion that your client lacked standing?
I believe her basis was that my client did not produce a lease or any bill showing that the property, that she had a possessory interest in the property. Now, that's contrary to, if you don't have a possessory interest in the property, how can you maintain or sustain some of the charges that was brought by the state?
But when you say some of the charges...
Well,
let's be precise.
Which all charge the charges. The only charge she did not find her guilty of was drug dealing. She found her guilty of maintaining and possession of marijuana. The marijuana was found in the bedroom and in the pockets of Mr. Bradley and the third person. Nothing was found on Ms. Cooper. They used what they found in the bedroom to charge drug dealing. They found what she said coming out of the bathroom against her as showing that she knew that the drugs were being dealt from that property. Yet, they're then saying she has no possessory interest in it, so she has no standing.
I understand how that relates, or at least I think I understand how that relates to the maintaining a drug property charge. But access and control are ways in which we've defined possession in the past. So how does it relate to the paraphernalia and the possession charge?
It relates, Your Honor, to where they were found. Now, again, there was two ways that the court could have went in this particular case. They chose to say there was no standing. The court could have very easily said she did have standing. However, the police officers had a valid warrant. The police officers knocked on the door. The door swung open. The person we're looking for is standing there. And then none of us are here today. That's not what the judge did. She chose to say there was no standing.
Because there was no possessory interest.
Which brings me
back to my first question. I asked if she had a possessory interest. You said she did. There were two witnesses that said
correct.
So. The state didn't prove otherwise.
That's correct.
What was the basis? Let me ask it differently. Sure, her name wasn't on the deed, correct?
Well, we did not produce the deed.
So there's no evidence that she was the record owner?
Correct. Only the testimony of the two witnesses that it was her apartment.
There was no lease produced?
No.
With her name on it?
No, there
so
was
that's,
not.
So the only evidence of possession were those two witnesses?
Were the two witnesses, and that was not rebutted by the state.
Okay.
Well, did the trial judge find those witnesses not to be credible?
The trial judge just basically said that she did not find that there was sufficient evidence to show that my client had a possessory interest in that dwelling.
All right, so she's, number one, you're saying that the trial judge was factually wrong.
Correct.
So on that basis alone, there would be no ground to find lack of standing.
Correct.
And if the trial judge were correct, then what?
Well, if the trial judge was correct, then looking at a line of federal decisions in wake of the Rackus decision, there's been, for example, in United States v. Robertson, the court found that a guest had interest in premises because he was arrested there. Going further, United States v. Blanchard, a guest in a motel had legitimate expectation of privacy in the premises. Commonwealth v. O'Neill, a temporary gratuitous guest had standing. So following the post-Rackus cases, there are sufficient, it seems to have been expanded to almost state that if you're there when you're arrested, you've got standing to challenge.
And evidence of your client's belongings being in the premises?
Again, that was never brought into the issue, Your Honor. Again, we relied primarily on the Miss Bradley, who was there getting her hair done, and Mr. Norwood, who was the father of Mr. Bradley, indicating to the officers that he was still moving his property from his ex-girlfriend's house, her ex-girlfriend's residence.
What's Delaware's position on the automatic standing rule that, at least in theory, has been rejected now by the United States Supreme Court but adopted by the New Jersey Supreme Court, derived from the New Jersey Constitution? Where are we on that issue?
I don't believe, Your Honor, that we have adopted it as of yet, and I'm asking you to adopt it, because I think it is the proper standard. If you're going to use this evidence that you seized to prosecute my client, why does not my client have the right to challenge the search? I mean, the state...
If the client was there.
If the client was there, correct. And really, that's all I have to say, unless Your Honor has other questions.
Well, I'd like to know the source in the Delaware Constitution for the application of the automatic standing rule in Delaware. What's the principled theory for it?
The principled theory, Your Honor, would be, I think, judicial fairness. You're going to charge somebody, and you're not going to allow them to challenge the methods used by the police to seize this or gather this evidence. I mean, it just seems, maybe I'm not that intellectually smart, but it seems to me that it's a no-brainer. If you're going to come into my house and you're going to search my house, and you're going to find evidence, I'm there, you're going to use that evidence against me, and then you're going to say you're not allowed to challenge it because you were just there, even though part of the evidence is you come out of a room and say, this guy's selling drugs out of my place, and you're going to use that against them, and you're going to say I don't have a right to challenge it. It just doesn't seem fair.
But just to make sure that I understand your position, and tell me if I have it right, we don't need to reach any of those legal issues because, you know, one of your claims is that the judge just got the facts wrong.
Correct.
I'd like to ask you about automatic standing and accomplice liability. How would that play out? Let's say the kingpin's only paying the rent, is not in actual possession. Is there standing under that?
I would say no, because the person was not there at the time of the arrest. Now, depending on the circumstances, I may change my position. But if you're telling me that the guy's paying the rent, he's not there, they can't tie him to the house other than the fact that his name is on a lease, I would say no. That he couldn't raise it.
Well, if his name's on the lease, that would give standing.
No, I think he would still have to be there. I mean, my name, for example, No, I guess maybe. I'd have to take a look at that, Your Honor. I'm not prepared to
answer
that.
Yeah, we're talking standing in the absence of facts that
right.
show a possessory interest.
That's
and
correct.
Certainly, name on the lease fundamentally shows a possessory right.
right. It would. But I'd still have to think it would be on a factual basis, factual basis.
And just so it's clear to me about what was proffered by or offered by the defense at the motion to suppress hearing, the defense counsel chose not to introduce a utility bill, a postal service there, an internet address, any connection
correct.
Between Ms. Cooper and the house. Relied
yeah.
solely on
the testimony
of
two
people
witnesses.
That she lived there.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good afternoon. Andrew Vella on behalf of the state. The Superior Court did not abuse its discretion in this case when it found that the defendant did not have standing to challenge the search.
What is the basis for finding that the defendant maintained the dwelling for keeping controlled substance?
The basis for the finding was the defendant's statements after the officers had entered, and she acknowledged that Kareem Bradley had been living there and been dealing drugs out of that house in which she lived. The state's argument is not that she did not factual, there was not a factual basis to find that there was standing. There was just not a factual basis in the record to find, and the defendant did not demonstrate standing. So to the extent that it seems inconsistent, there are two different proceedings and two different burdens for two different parties. At the suppression hearing, it is the defendant's burden to demonstrate standing. In this case, there's no record that would support that the defendant demonstrated standing. In this case, there were two passing comments by witnesses that made reference to Cheryl Cooper's house. That was it. There was no other evidence presented.
At the suppression hearing?
That was at the suppression hearing. And that is the defendant's burden. That is what this court has consistently held, is that it is the defendant's burden to demonstrate that they have standing to challenge the search.
Okay, but just so that I've got the record straight in my mind, there were two witnesses that testified.
There were, that's
that,
correct.
That the dwelling was her residence, correct?
They testified that Mr. Von Norwood said his son, Kareem Bradley, was living over with Cheryl Cooper. Kareem Bradley's mother testified that she was outside of Cheryl Cooper's house, which is 2450 North Market Street. That's the residence we're talking
right, so
about.
So there was today. Some evidence.
There was evidence. Yes, there were evidence. There was evidence that made mention of Cheryl Cooper living at 2450 North Market.
All right. But no documentary evidence.
No documentary evidence.
Okay, so are we, I mean, is the factual issue one of burden of proof, that is the adequacy of the evidence that was presented?
Yes.
It's not a question of there being no evidence. No,
that is correct. That is correct. The state's position is that the defendant did not carry her burden. In this case, those two passing references were insufficient, and that is what the trial court found. The only evidence.
And is there any case law to guide us on that? Because this was a bench ruling.
This was a bench ruling. That is correct, Your Honor. The state is unaware of the quantum of proof necessary for the defendant to carry that burden.
Is that any significance that it's uncontradicted?
The state would suggest, well, the absence of evidence can't make for evidence on the other side. Because it was uncontradicted.
Well, we're not talking about an absence of evidence. We're talking about adequacy of the evidence. And it's uncontradicted. What does the trial judge demonstrate in her analysis was the basis for her rejecting that testimony?
She simply found that there was insufficient evidence based on the witness's testimony, referring to the two witnesses who testified.
So there is no rationale. She just said it was insufficient.
She said it was insufficient.
She didn't say why it was insufficient.
She did not say why it was insufficient.
Is there, so I take it the defendant did not testify herself at the suppression hearing?
Correct? No, she did not.
Did the defendant sign an affidavit in support of the motion to suppress?
No.
does not a motion to suppress require an affidavit anymore?
I don't believe one was filed in this case. I didn't see an affidavit. I'm the trial prosecutor on this case. I did not see an affidavit from Cheryl Cooper.
All right, so there was no rationale in the bench ruling, and you're telling us that there's no guidance from the Delaware trial courts on this precise issue, correct?
In terms of the quantum of proof necessary for the defendant to demonstrate, I don't know that I've seen any. And certainly the cases that the state cited in its brief do not make mention of what that quantum of proof is.
Well, what's the trial judge to do when ultimately, during the same proceeding, there's sufficient evidence to show a possessory interest that's used to convict? And should the judge revisit the ruling on standing or not?
The state's position is that the trial judge should not revisit the ruling. Again, the suppression hearing is a separate proceeding, and that burden is separately on the defendant. When we get to trial, the defendant has no burden. It's the state's burden. And at that point, the judge has already ruled based on the record. We can't go back and supplement the record just because the defense lost that one.
Well, if the trial judge has already ruled, as you put it, that the defendant has no possessory interest, how does the state obtain a conviction for maintaining a property in the absence of a possessory interest in the property?
And not to put too fine a point on it, I don't know that the judge in this case, and the state's not arguing that the defendant had no possessory interest. The judge found that there was not sufficient evidence for the defendant to demonstrate. The defendant didn't carry her burden. And I think there is a distinction between the judge finding that the defendant has no possessory interest versus the judge finding that the defendant failed to demonstrate that she had a possessory interest or failed to carry that burden.
Same trial judge as the judge who ruled on the motion to suppress?
Yes.
And in terms of separation in time, were they?
1 month.
1 month?
I'm sorry.
Is it a preponderance of the evidence burden at the motion to suppress?
For the state?
No. You claim your position is the defendant has the burden of establishing the possessory interest. Is
yes.
That burden a preponderance of the evidence?
I believe that goes back to Justice Jacobs' question. I don't know that this court has pronounced what the standard is in terms of the quantum of proof necessary for the defendant to carry their burden.
Well, what would it be other than a preponderance of the evidence?
I'm not sure because the court hasn't said. And if
the
court's
argument,
it certainly wouldn't be proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Certainly not.
Which was the burden the state had in order to establish a possessory interest for the purpose of convicting her of maintaining a drug property, correct?
Correct.
So if the defendant fails by preponderance of the evidence or less to establish a possessory interest for the purpose of standing to challenge the search, we shouldn't find it troublesome that the state, with no more evidence than that, and except for an admission by the defendant that she knew drug dealing was going on that property in which it had been ruled she did not have a possessory interest, the state has a burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt that it was her property, but there's no additional evidence to support that.
But there was in this case.
And what is it?
The additional evidence was the statement. It was the defendant's statement.
Beyond the statement, what is it? Did the state introduce utility bills, a lease, a deed?
No, the state did not.
Anything to show that she had...
The state did not.
This was her property for the purpose of that charge.
The state did not. The state did not.
And the possession was basically not on a theory of accomplice liability. This was actually her home for purposes of the conviction.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
Tell me why we shouldn't be troubled by that inconsistency.
The state's position is that these are two separate proceedings. And while it seems inconsistent, it's just different burdens of proof by different parties at different proceedings. And because the defense failed to make their burden, to meet the burden, doesn't mean the state can't continue to introduce evidence in a later proceeding to prove her guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. That is not inconsistent. as not inconsistent.
But if I understand the state's position correctly, and I may not, the only evidence the state offered was there were drugs found on that property, and she admitted that her boyfriend was dealing drugs on the property.
That is correct.
But she didn't have any drugs on her person.
She did not.
And she didn't claim to own any of the other drugs on the property.
She did not.
But had she offered the same evidence that the state offered at trial, you agree that she would have carried her burden of proving a possessory interest beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes.
And that's not inconsistent?
The state would suggest
what happened with the ruling that pertained to the same evidence, same record, at the suppression hearing 1 month earlier?
It's not inconsistent because the burden is on a different party at that suppression hearing.
Well, the state had a worse burden, didn't it? I mean, the trial judge ruled was that the defendant did not meet her burden of proving by a preponderance that she had a possessory interest. At the trial, the state had the burden of showing beyond a reasonable doubt that she had a possessory interest.
And the state developed the record beyond what the defense did in the suppression.
I thought they didn't, as terms of possessory interest. I thought it was identical.
No, Your Honor, it's not identical. And I suppose that's the point. The evidence was not identical. The evidence that the state used at trial consisted of most of the same evidence that was used at the suppression hearing, but in addition, it was the defendant's statement. The defendant's statement of, I live here, Kareem Bradley lives here, I know he deals drugs out of here. I let him do that, which is why we get a maintaining a drug property conviction.
Did she say, I live here?
At suppression. She said words to the effect of, he lives with me, but indicated clearly she lived there.
Well, I'm not really interested in words to the effect of. What did she say?
I don't know exactly what she said at trial or to the police.
I thought you had said earlier what she said was, my boyfriend's dealing drugs here. But now you've added, I live here, my boyfriend lives here, he's dealing drugs here. Which is it?
I apologize if I've created any confusion for the court. I don't recall exactly what she said. I recall and I know the court's not interested in what I think she said, but my recollection is the thrust of her comments were, I live with him, Kareem Bradley, he deals drugs out of here, and I know he does that.
That was the statement given to the police.
Words to that effect, and again, I
understand. That statement was part of the evidence at trial.
At trial, but not at suppression. Not at suppression. The only evidence at suppression.
So it would be critical for us to know precisely what she said in that statement in order to test the state's argument that the record at the trial on the issue of possessory interest is materially different from the record at the suppression stage.
At the suppression stage, the state would agree, sure, as in theory, yes. However, at the suppression, there was no, her statement didn't come in at all at suppression. We didn't proffer her statement. We didn't have
a witness. But it may not matter if her statement didn't contain words to the effect that I live here. And we don't know. Do you have a record site?
I do not have the trial record with me.
Is it correct that the merits of the motion to suppress were never argued or addressed by the trial judge?
That is correct. The merits were never addressed. The trial judge made factual findings but did not address the merits.
What's your position on the automatic standing rule in the Delaware Constitution?
That it would be inconsistent with the prior holdings of this court. This court has consistently said that a defendant must demonstrate that they have standing. It would be inconsistent with those holdings.
A defendant could establish they had automatic standing. The question is, do we follow lockstep what the United States Supreme Court says about automatic standing, or do we follow our sister state, New Jersey, because we have similar provision in our Constitution as the New Jersey Constitution, and declare that there's an automatic standing rule in Delaware that you can't simply be on the premises without a possessory interest, be charged with something that implies you have a possessory interest, yet not have standing to question the seizure. Where are we left with this?
I believe the state would suggest that the automatic standing rule is not appropriate in this jurisdiction.
Why?
Again, because the state's position is that it is not in the spirit of the prior holdings of this court.
Well, that's not a policy reason. This court makes mistakes infrequently, I'd like to think, but on occasion we do, and we need to readdress the issue. Is this the appropriate case to readdress the issue?
It is not the appropriate case to readdress the issue. And the state would suggest it's not the appropriate case to readdress the issue because there's not enough of a factual record for this court to decide it on in this case. The court wants to remand it for further factual findings.
And so what additional facts do we need to know in order to examine the policy behind the automatic standing rule in this case?
In this case, I think it would be important for the court to know what exactly Cheryl Cooper's possessory interest was or was not in this particular residence and the interplay with Kareem Bradley.
Well, if we don't know that, how can we affirm a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt that she did maintain a drug property?
Because the basis for the appeal is the suppression decision, and the state's position is that there's an insufficient record that she possessed standing for that proceeding.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In just brief rebuttal, Your Honors.
We think, defense believes there is sufficient evidence to establish standing.
Was there a written motion to suppress?
Yes, there was.
And is it required that there be an affidavit in support of a motion to suppress?
In all candor, that has not been the practice of the court for quite some time, even though I believe it is still there. I don't know why, and I'm not even sure that one was not filed in this particular case. To answer your question, yes, it is a rule. It does not seem to be followed by the Superior Court. And three, I do not know if I filed one in this particular case.
Mr. Filiola,
yes.
Can you help us out with respect to what what Ms. Cooper's statement said? And tell us whether it is correct that statement was part of the trial record but not part of the motion to suppress record.
It is not in the motion to suppress. I have the motion to suppress with me, and while you were asking Mr. Vella, I did read it, and it is in the trial transcript, but it is not in the motion to suppress.
All right, and what is the "it" that's in the trial transcript?
That it was her house and that she knew that Mr. Bradley was selling drugs from that house. And she further testified that was the reason she kicked him out.
Her statement was that it was her house.
It was hers, and that that was the reason she asked Mr. Bradley to leave. And also, in reference to Justice Steele, I think this is the case to follow our brethren state, New Jersey. It just seems unjust that a person can be arrested for items found when they were present in the premises, be labeled a felon, face possible jail time, and then not have a right to challenge the state's search.
Was that argued below?
No, I did not make that argument below. In fact, we had very little chance to argue anything below, other than judges found there was no standing, and therefore the merits of the search warrant just were never addressed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.